You were giving dissertation on the film industry.
That's correct, Robert.
Please, continue.
Well, I am by no means a film expert. However, my background is an arts and entertainment journalist since 1997, and I have written many film reviews, and I have interviewed many filmmakers, including writers, directors, producers, and talent. So I think I have some insight into how a film is produced, how it's distributed, how it's marketed, and why certain stories never get told, and why you see certain stories over and over and over ad nauseum.
Right.
Okay.
You were very adamant, and you were talking about the film industries, how they will, what did you say, they'll bill a studio?
Well, you know, a studio, the film industry is like any other industry. You know, in L.A., they call it a company town. Okay, so you start off in film school, like you do if you're an MBA or anything else. Those people that you are in school with will become your colleagues. They will become people that will be able to funnel money to you to finance your project. So, number one, if you're not going to prestigious film school, it's very difficult to raise money. If you are fortunate enough to be able to go that track, you know, say you want to actually be a director. So you're going to a film school, you're going with other people that are probably wanting to become producers. And then they go on to get jobs in studios, probably after they do an internship. Now, one of the interesting things about internships is that you don't get paid, right? You're working for these huge, glamorous studios that make billions of dollars, but they will hire interns that they don't even give 1 cent to. But the people that are able to do that generally are people who are able to attend those expensive film schools to begin with. You know, their families have money, so they go to an expensive film school. They can afford to work for free for 1 year because maybe they live with mommy and daddy, you know, parents split their bill, whatever, you know, for their iPhone. So they can do that. They can put that year in, which is going to be very valuable for them somewhere down the line. And so then let's say then they do get hired by that particular studio and they become an executive and maybe they get in the acquisitions department or development where, you know, they actually can finance a project, watch it, you know, help develop it to the point where they decide, okay, this studio is going to make your picture. And then you were the lucky person that went to film school with that executive when they were just a student. So now, you know, you have name familiarity, you have, you know, you've maybe worked on projects in film school together. So that's that good old boy system that is really hard to break. So when Tarantino and Spike Lee and some of these other people came through in, I would say, maybe like mid-80s, and decided, well, that's not fair, you know. Maybe I'm poor, maybe I'm a minority, maybe I could not get into UCLA film school. So there's got to be another way. Well, that's when you saw this whole independent film community start up. And now it's just gotten to the point where nobody knows what to expect. You look at Hollywood as a system, as a major industry, and you look at the Academy Awards, which is like a huge popularity contest, always has been, it was a way that the studios would be able to sell a film that didn't do so well the first time it was released. Oh, we'll nominate this person for their acting ability in this film, and now we're going to get all this publicity on this particular film, and now we can re-release it in the theaters for a second run, and we'll make some of our money back that we spent the first time, and nobody went to see the film. So that's what the whole Academy Awards system was about. It has nothing to do with popularity, and that's why Dick Clark created the People's Awards, because that was more focused on what the average person likes. But this is a popularity contest, and it's a way for the studios to make money back. But in the last few years, you are seeing this influx of independent films becoming part of this, what was always known as a studio system. So that's where it begins to get very interesting. The film Slumdog Millionaire, directed by Danny Boyle, just shocked people that the fact that, first of all, it made all this money with no bankable stars. Nobody had ever heard of these Indian kids living in a ghetto in Calcutta. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they're in this billion-dollar movie, and it becomes the best, it gets the Best Picture Academy Award for that year. So that was just totally shocking to everybody. And then it continues. Last year, it was The Hurt Locker, which also, I believe, started out as an independent project, and it was the first time a female director ever won in the history of the Academy Awards. So, you know, you have, something is happening, you know, it's a revolution. Something is happening because people are saying, it's not fair if I can't be part of this hierarchy, you know, that starts out with going to the best film school, becoming colleagues with these people that will eventually get jobs in the studio system that can green light my project. If I can't do that, what are the alternatives? And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing people finding these alternatives. And in particularly right now, one of the most, one of the most controversial ways now of financing independent projects is through websites like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, where you put up all this information about your project, and, you know, big problem, as always, is you got to drive people over to that, your particular site, to get them to make donations or come on board as an investor.
With a few minutes remaining, would you like to discuss Watermelon Sushi and how it's similar to some of the other independent films that have been made or in production, and how it's different?
Watermelon Sushi is, I think, is very, I was very excited about Slumdog Millionaire because they had no name talent, no A-list talent in the film, and you have heard investors say for years and years and years, if you don't have an A-list star, you're not going to get an investor. We're not interested. And that's going to be very similar with Watermelon Sushi because the characters are, you know, they're Afro-Asian, and you cannot look at Hollywood talent and, you know, really throw out any names there. I don't know any other than Denise Lawrence, who's Korean and African-American, Kimora Lee Simmons, who's also Japanese, Korean, and Black. You know, they're just the talent, where are they? So that's going to be the most difficult challenge, is finding the right talent to fit the roles. And it's a very different story. But I think, you know, at its core, it's a very similar story. It's a story about family. And that's what I think is in common with really good stories, is you want to tell a good story about a family. So Watermelon Sushi has been a long time in the making, which, like a fine wine, only gets better with age. So, you know, thanks to you, Robert, coming on board. I think we will get it done this time.
Well, thanks to you too, Yayoi, Lena Winfrey, and this is the first edition of Yayoi's Sexy Voices of Hollywood.